Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 36 of Season 7 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Thank you for having me back on, and for some John McClane action.
Yeah, of course. I mean, come on. We always want to talk about your former lawyer. So why not?
You know. I was just talking about him yesterday too. It was very strange. Like this is.
Did you yippee-ki-yay him?
Of course. I still have his number in my phone as John McClane yippee-ki-yay. Just in case. Not that I'm getting divorced again, ever.
I completely understand that feeling. Definitely. All right. So on that happy note for both of us, minute 36 begins with John frantically checking the train and ends with Zeus asking once again, very politely. So we ended things on a frantic note on Friday. You know, we have John running through the subway train. We have Zeus running down into the train station, jumping over the turnstiles, and you know we were left with a cliffhanger weekend. You know, where we had to see what was going to happen or anything like that. And you know we start this minute off completely, continuing the exact same thing that we were just watching. You know, we see John on the train. And he's frantically trying to find this this bomb, but the thing I love about it is that he doesn't know, just like we don't know what it looks like.
Yeah,
he's just looking for something out of the ordinary, you know. And what could it be, you know? And it's a great idea the way that they do it. We'll get there shortly to find out what it is. So he's moving through the train and he's actually being pretty polite with the way he's doing it. Saying, excuse me, watch out. Excuse me, sir. Pardon me, please. Excuse. And
yeah, he's trying not to alarm anybody.
You can feel, that's right. But you can also feel the pressure that he's feeling with the whole thing. You know, as he's moving through the train and stuff like that. Did you take a look at any of the ads that are like on the walls of the subway train?
Yeah, there's one that has something for Arizona, I think. Maybe it's cigarettes, maybe not cigarettes, but it's something like Arizona Cool.
No, it's not cigarettes.
It's not cigarettes. Maybe it's okay. Arizona iced tea. I didn't know if they'd have a real ad in there. And then there's another one with
first of all, it is.
It is Arizona iced tea. All right.
Yes.
And the other one I saw was right next to the whatchamacallit, and that one had a shark on it, and all I saw was chew.
Okay, there's a little more than that. Yeah, it says Audio Crunch. You know, it's first of all a big shout out to Jay and Mark, you know, from the Deep Blue Sea Pod. I mean, I know that Jay is a big shark fan, so I
Jay
wonder.
Jay doesn't like sharks and or
I'm sure
water
I'll find out.
At all. That's a fib. If you're listening, Jay, I called him on it.
Yeah. I was in an aquarium like on a work trip I think 2 years ago, and I sent him a picture of like this little shark, and he's like, oh cool, shark. So
that's awesome.
Now the big question is, and I'll find out, you know, the day that this airs, you know, did Jay notice or Mark that there is a poster with a shark in this movie?
Yeah, because now they can do this movie.
So. That's right. This can be a Deep Blue Sea adjacent film because it has a shark, and it has all this you know, it says on the ad, it says Audio Crunch Crumb Chew Chew Chow Chomp.
Chomp, yeah. You know? I see it now. I see it. What is it for? What the heck? Or is this just a silly thing that they put
that is
in there?
That's an ad for the Aquarium for Wildlife Conservatorium.
That definitely catches the eye.
Conservatorium.
I always look in the background.
It really does.
When you do these and you send me the clips. I usually look through them a couple times, even if I've watched the movie ahead of time. And I usually look through them a couple times, and I'm paying more attention to the details because of that, unless it's something I've already seen 8 million times and I've done this on my own anyway. But that one.
No, but you see, even if you watch it 8 million times, you'll still notice. These are things I've never noticed before.
That one, the shark stood out to me because I like sharks, probably. But I did. I caught it when he was first looking in. I'm going, oh, shark. And then I giggled. And then when I came back after watching it again and looked at the clip, I was like, oh, but yeah, I didn't know what it was for or if it was.
I never noticed this in the dozens of times that I've seen this movie. I've never paid any attention to that until I was doing research here. And so that's why I love doing this, because, you know, these are things you're not supposed to notice.
No.
You know, it's just there.
Well, and that's a cool thing about watching stuff so many times over too. And I know we talk about this when we do the show, which you do all the time, and I do like once or twice a year. but that is the cool thing that you find.
Well, that's because you're a movie snob. You'll only do Die Hard movies.
I won't only do Die Hard movies. I've done another one, haven't I? Else other than Die Hard.
I'm kidding. No, you did. No, you did. You were on Clinton's Automobiles with me. And you did When Harry Met Sally, which, as we were talking about beforehand, those are some of my favorite episodes, the ones that I do with you. So, you know,
yay.
There you go. Anyone who's interested in listening to Heather and myself talk about the orgasm scene in When Harry Met Sally, you can go back and listen to that, you know, from season 4. It's, if I remember correctly, it's at their episodes 46 to 50.
Oh wow, that is,
if I remember
really,
correctly.
Really good memory on your part. Also, specifically that episode.
And I didn't look it up. I could look it up now.
Impressive.
But
that's really impressive. My mom, I think she's listened to, I've been podcasting it. Wow, someone asked me this recently, and I'm like, oh, I've been podcasting for somewhere between 16 and 17, 18 years at this point. And she's never shown any interest in listening to any of the shows I've ever done, been on, or anything like that. She loves When Harry Met Sally. It's why I saw it as young as I did. And she said she listened to at least one of those.
Wow. So, and was she impressed or was she embarrassed?
I don't know. She would be embarrassed. She did raise me. So she knows. She knows what she's got here as a daughter. But yeah, she never did follow up and tell me which one she listened to and what she had to say about it. But still, I'll take her.
Okay,
I'll take her.
So I did look it up. And yes, it was. It's episodes 46 to 50. I was correct.
Put them out there. The best in the entire movie. I'm the best guest. It was me. I was there.
You are among the very best guests. But like I said, of the 800 and close to 50 episodes that I've done of this podcast, I always remember those episodes very fondly, because they were we just did it so well.
We did.
Yeah.
Patting ourselves on the back right now.
Yes.
Let's do it. You guys pat us on the back.
That's right. That's right. I'm virtually patting you on the back. There you go.
Very, very exhausting being this awesome all the time. I'm full of it today.
Okay. So yes. So which do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about the wildlife, the aquarium for wildlife conservatorium, or do you want to talk first about the Arizona?
Okay, I'm super excited about the shark. Let's go into the wildlife conservatory, which I'm actually sincerely curious about anyway.
In a few seconds, we'll get an even closer view of it, and we can see on the poster a whole bunch of names of a whole bunch of countries that are listed there. On the border, we see India, Rwanda, Honduras, Argentina, Laos, Uganda.
Oh.
Those are like all the different countries that you can see on the left-hand side of the poster. We never get a view of the rest of it, so I can't really tell you what it is. So the Wildlife Conservation Society, it's the abbreviation is WCS. And it was created, and originally was known as the New York Zoological Society. Let's see if you can guess. How long ago do you think it was created?
Oh, I'm going to say the late 80s.
The late 1980s,
yes.
Or the late 1880s?
Oh, gosh, I'm so far off. And if you're trying to edge me in that direction, let's say 1942. That's a really bad timeline.
1895.
What? Okay, that's great. Also, wow.
It's been around for 129 years.
Well, I was close with an 8 in there.
That's right. It's located in the Bronx Zoo. And they have a staff of about 3,700 people that work there. It was called the New York Zoological Society up until 1993. So I guess it's relatively new when this movie came out of them changing the name of it.
All right.
You know, which is very cool. They basically manage four New York wildlife parks in addition to the Bronx Zoo. They have the Central Park Zoo, the New York Aquarium, Prospect Park Zoo, and the Queen Zoo. These parks all together have more than 4 million visitors every year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty damn cool, though.
Yeah. So basically they started, the state of New York decided to charter it in 1895. And their mandate was to advance native wildlife conservation and promote the study of zoology and create a first-class zoological park that would be free to the public.
And it's
You know,
free
I don't
too.
know. I mean, I've
Wow.
I that's the thing. That's like really strange. I don't think it's still I don't believe it's free. I think I was at the Bronx Zoo once, like many years ago, so I couldn't tell you if it still is free.
There's very few things on
But
the planet that are free anymore, so that alone it would be
that's
shocking.
right. Well, we talked a few weeks ago about the Staten Island Ferry, that is free.
Oh,
You know, you can go back and forth
really?
around that. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But I from what I can see, it's not free. But I don't know. That I can't really can't really tell you. But you see, what makes me curious is where do they have the sharks in any of these places? They probably don't have it in Central Park. That would be my
I'm
guess.
guessing no
But
on
I could
that
be
one.
wrong.
Yeah. So if it's a conservatory, maybe it's I don't know. Now I'm curious though. Now I want to know. I would like to know more.
It reminds me, there you go. The more you know. So it reminds me actually from Star Trek 4, you know, when they were at the, you know, when with watching the whales and stuff like that, when they're in San Francisco. So I mean that type of thing is what it reminds me of, you know, that it's a similar type of place, but I don't know. You know, I'm not doing this, you know, I'm not doing minute by minute of Star Trek 4, so I couldn't tell you if that is a real facility that they just used or it was a made up one for the movie.
It, I didn't
That, you know,
either.
I never looked at never looked it up, so I couldn't tell
I
you.
know that I called all humpback whales Gracies for a long time.
Not George, just Gracie.
Just Gracie. They were all Gracies. I thought they were all ladies. Yep.
Well, if they're all ladies, there will not be future. Well, there you go. Now we know why the species died out.
Oh no, they've had a resurgence, and a lot of people actually say it's because so many people in our generation grew up during the timeline where that movie came out, and people became more aware of humpback whales because of it. I just read something
That's really
recently.
cool.
Yeah, like a movie that was not intentionally necessarily trying to send that message. Obviously, it was part of it, but yeah, there's been
Wow.
a resurgence in humpback whales, and I believe part of it has been due to people being aware of it because of Star Trek 4. So yeah, not so bad.
Oh,
So
wow.
movies,
That
who
is
knew?
really
I
cool.
know, so cool sci-fi movies that people may disregard have a good impact on our world.
There you go. They shouldn't disregard it. Star Trek 4 is one of my favorite Star
Oh
Trek movies because
yes.
it's so much fun. You know, and it's so 80s.
It's
You know,
yes.
that's what it comes down
Literally,
to.
that's the reason why I jumped to the 1980s with my first thought of the conservatory. I was like, late 80s, let's go. And probably a lot of the stuff started up because of that.
It's very possible. You know,
It was I was
maybe that's
100
why they
years I
changed
was
the
100
name.
years off. I was 100 years off.
But I'm saying maybe they changed, that's why they changed the name.
Maybe.
You know, it was originally just the Zoological Society and now it's Conservatorium. So maybe, you know, they said, hey, look, if Kirk and Spock can use colorful metaphors and get people to change their views on humpback whales, maybe we should change the name of our company. I don't know.
I would.
So the WCS works in 60 different nations around the world, and they have more than 500 different projects that are being that were designed to help protect the wildlife and habitats around the world. So that's really cool stuff. I mean, they deal with the gorillas in Africa, tigers in Asia,
Right.
macaws in South America,
That's wonderful.
stuff like that. So it's just very cool that that they have this stuff. So all right, again, I don't know where the sharks come in. So maybe Jay knows, because I know he was in New York like once.
Yeah.
So maybe he said, oh, I want to go see. I think he went with his parents right after he graduated college or something like that. So maybe he said, I want to go see sharks in the Bronx Zoo or whatever it is. Maybe he'll be able to answer us. So anyone who knows that, please let us know where the sharks are.
Yeah, I need to
Where
know.
are them
And I'll
sharks
forget
at?
by the time we're done recording to go do any research on my own. So
Yeah. Okay.
somebody else
That's
do the
fair.
research for me, please. Thank you. I love when I
All
come on
right.
Rob's
So the
show
second,
because
the
I always
second.
get I get a plentiful amount of information of things that I needed to know that I didn't know I needed to know.
There you go. That's what it's for. I was a kid who loved playing Trivial Pursuit, and I was very good at it because, I'm a container of vast knowledge that most people think you don't need.
But you do. But you do.
Mostly about movies,
Yeah.
but still.
Movies we need to know.
But
Storytelling
yeah, of course.
is very important for all of us.
That's right. 100%. So the second ad, the one that we were actually the first ad that we saw that we didn't talk about yet, is, and you were correct, Heather, it's the Arizona Beverage Company.
Oh,
Okay,
it is,
which
isn't it?
makes iced tea. It makes iced tea, juice cocktails, energy drinks. It's based in Woodbury, New York. Okay, now, do you know what year it was started? And I'll give you a hint, it's not 1895.
You know what? I wish that was more helpful. I am going to say 1956.
No, I was trying to steer you closer to what your guess was on the other
In
one.
the 80s?
That was the idea. 1992.
1992. All right. That actually makes sense. That's when I started seeing them. They were the tall cans, and everybody had them all the time. I've never liked iced tea or tea of any kind. So I never had any real interest in it, but they were so popular. They were in like all of the convenience stores and 7-Elevens and stuff like that. We saw them everywhere and everybody
Right.
had
And
them.
do you know why it was created in 1992?
I do not.
Because they wanted to compete against Snapple.
Oh
Because
yeah, I
Snapple
forgot
became very
Snapple.
popular back
Because
then.
of the Snapple lady, they had some great marketing. The Snapple lady was great, and then they had the lids with all the little stuff underneath, which I don't even remember what they were because I didn't like Snapple either. But I did like their marketing campaign. It was fun. Snapple lady was cool.
Right. Up until then, they were actually a beer distribution company. From 1971 to 1992, they were beer distributors. And then in 1990, when they saw the success of Snapple, they decided to change everything and start making they're based in Long Island. So sort of makes sense.
Why are they
Long Island tea.
Arizona then? Why are they Arizona iced tea? Why aren't they Long Island iced tea? All right.
We shall get there. We'll get there. So first of all, it's they're known for the fact that they have big cans. The cans that they use are not the standard ones. They're 22 ounces, which is 650 milliliters, and they have one kind that the Arizona Chocolate Fudge Float, which is 695 milliliters. So it's even larger.
That's too much tea.
That's right. It costs usually about $1 per can, and they started making smaller cans. They have 20 ounce cans and 16 ounce cans and 11 and a half ounce cans, but they also have 128 ounce cans, which is basically a gallon. You can
Why?
buy a
Oh.
gallon.
Oh, I have seen those. I have seen those. Yeah.
Maybe it's for like partying. Instead you're doing a toga party, and instead of having beer, you're gonna have Arizona iced tea. I don't know.
I see them at, now that I'm thinking about it, I've seen them at the store selling them like that. People probably drink a bunch of it in the summer, I imagine. It's a refreshing summer drink, just like lemonade, which I'm also not a big fan of.
Right.
So I guess I see that. Yeah. Right. The big cans though, I specifically remember. I remember being in junior high and seeing people with those going, what the heck?
So originally they wanted to call it Santa Fe because one of the owners, a guy named Don Voltaggio, used to live in a thatched house. So he decided that, he wanted to call it Santa Fe, but then he just said it didn't look right. So he basically said, okay, Santa Fe, what's that close to? Ah, okay, it's close to, it's close to Arizona. So they decided just to name it Arizona that way, even though he'd never been there.
That's so weird ever. And funny.
Yeah.
It really is.
And apparently he's never been west of the Mississippi.
Wow. That's even stranger. It's utterly bizarre to me. I like naming things. Yeah. So, and sometimes I spend an inordinate amount of time researching names for things that don't really matter because I enjoy naming them. And I think it's important. And this is so random to me.
Yeah. And what's really cool, first of all, is that the Z is large, you know, in the logo itself. It's A-R-I, A, big A-R-I, and sure then big is. Z. Oh, and I actually looked up this ad, and I was able to find this ad, the Arizona Cool, which basically has two cans, or one's a can and one's a bottle, of Arizona tea basically lying on the beach. So it's just really cool that you can just Google it and see this particular ad. The conservatory, I couldn't find the ad, but this one I was able to find the ad for.
Oh, I'm surprised you can.
Which is very, very
cool. Yeah, that is cool, though. That is cool. It's cool. Arizona Cool is what it is. I didn't necessarily say Cools, though. I remember having a friend who smoked Cools. And I was like, you're just smoking them. And it was while I was in college. And I was like, you're just smoking these because of the name, aren't you? And he didn't deny it. So that was why I went to the Cools. On there, and plus, I think by this timeline that there was, you didn't see cigarette advertisements very often anymore, if at all. I know that there wasn't TV commercials.
They were starting to phase out at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, they were starting to phase out at this point.
Because we still, which you may, you may remember because you're from Southfield area over here. The Marlboro,
yes, I am.
The Marlboro Man. Do you remember him on 94?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. He was, I think it was sometime in the late 90s that they finally, or maybe early 2000s that they finally took him down.
Okay. And yeah, I do remember. We would drive by that all the time.
Yeah.
And I remember the big tire also.
The big tire's still there. It better be.
We always talk about nostalgia, Detroit, you know, when we talk about these things. Come on, don't you remember we talked about Bablo?
I do remember Bablo because you're the only one of the only people that aren't, like, living in Michigan area that I can bring that up to. People think I'm crazy and have made it up. I'm like, no, it was real. It was a real thing.
Exactly.
And it's cool, too.
That's very true. Very cool. Very cool. All right, so we've gotten through 8 seconds of this episode so far.
Yeah, we're gonna be real fast today.
Right. So John then looks over and he notices something a little strange. So he, you know, taps one of the guys on the shoulder and goes, "We step out of here for a minute." The guy goes, "What?" He goes, "I'm out. I'm a cop. Step out of here for a minute, please. Will ya?"
I would have just said he wait because, you know, look at him. He's covered in blood. He's sweaty.
That's right.
He looks like a dangerous man, right, at the very least.
That is correct. And he happens to notice a police call box, you know, a yellow police call box, which I think, first of all, it's very clever,
yeah,
to hide something like this in a call box like this, you know, because nobody's going to take note of it. But it's a good thing John McClane, who probably is never traveling on the subway himself, would notice that this is out of place.
No, who would?
You know,
and then ironically, you know, it says his name on it. Police. Hello. I think that's the last place you would expect it to be. It's clever. It's very clever.
That is correct. Now, do you know when they started? First of all, you know the idea of a police phone?
I am aware of the concept of it, but not where it began its origins or anything of that nature. And you don't see them anymore. Okay, certainly not around here.
Well, no, because now everyone has cell phones.
Yes.
You know.
Which aren't really phones.
But back.
Our little computers. We should just start calling what they are. Our computers. Our pocket computers.
No, but it's more than just computers. That's the whole thing. It's a multi, it's a Swiss Army computer.
Oh, see, there you go.
Because you can do so many different things from it.
Brand it. You got it.
Yeah. Well, I back to when Harry Met Sally, I remember on the commentary that Rob Reiner was talking about the fact that, you know, there's a scene where someone has to, you know, the scene where Marie takes out her Filofax and starts writing down, you know, she takes out the index cards, looking at the, you know, trying to find a date for Sally. Oh, and yeah. In that scene, he talks about the fact that nowadays that just wouldn't work because everyone just has their phone and it's all these things in one.
Yep.
You know, you can put it, you have a phone and you can have, you can, you know, keep files there and you can, you know, take pictures and all these different, you don't have to carry on anything else. You know, you have your phone. That's it. You know, it replaces all of these things at once, which is really cool. So the idea of a police call box is that policemen, you know, since there weren't cell phones, policemen were able to call something in. There would be at certain intervals places where they can make phone calls. I mean, going back to last season in It's a Wonderful Life, they have that also. You know, there is a call box that you can use. I mean, Ernie the taxi driver uses it also.
Well,
it's just in a strange place.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's not in the house. It's just on the street and it's just a phone that you can use. So the idea of a police telephone started in 1877.
All right.
Which was a year after Alexander Graham Bell patented the phone. And the idea was so that police and other trusted members of the public, you know, were able to make calls from specific places, you know, not in your home and things like that. They used to have, you know, like these little kiosks where you can go and use them in order to basically shield the phones from, you know, the weather, inclement weather and things like that. And they also made it a little more difficult so that people couldn't go into them just on a whim and you know, discourage false alarms and stuff like that. And that started mostly in New York and then in Chicago. And then following Chicago, they installed in Washington, D.C. in 1883. And guess where they installed them the year after? Any guess?
Not Detroit. Detroit?
Detroit. Really? Detroit. You are right.
We need them here. We do. We still need them.
That's, yeah, of course. And then in 1885, they started in Boston. And the whole idea was that it was a direct telephone line that would go into, you know, a particular place, and you usually had to have like a key or you could sometimes break a panel in order to get into it and stuff like that. But then they decided to start restricting it in certain cities to just the police to use them. But if members of the public, you know, needed to use it, there was a way for them to turn it into like a regular phone as opposed to just going to a particular place. And they had different signals that people could use. They had 11 different signals, which were police wagon required, thieves, forgers, murder, accident, fire, drunkard. I mean, it's pretty interesting that those are the things that they thought of. They said, hey, what, you know, if you have trouble with, you know, if there are drunkards around, so just pick up that phone and call in drunkards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little strange. But hey, and murder. I love that murder is on there. Murder. Thieves, murder, accident,
yeah.
Fire, drunkard. Just, you know,
that's
just common occurrences.
In. Yeah, just tossed in. Just a part of the yeah. Cornucopia of stuff. Just in case there's murder.
That's right.
Be casual about it, all right? Casual about murder.
That's right.
I do like the idea of it, though. It would have gotten abused, certainly. There would have been definite kids that would have used it as a prank system of some kind, but I could see it in its early stages being used for probably more so for things like fires and that kind of thing too, where you couldn't usually get that information out fast enough to get help.
Right.
But yeah, that's pretty cool.
Right. So John then does something really, really stupid and brave at the same time. You know, he touches the box and like taps it, and you see it like slide down a little bit.
Yeah.
You'd think, I mean, I guess he paid attention when Charlie was talking that it has to be mixed for it to explode. So it's not as if it's something that if you just touch it, it's going to explode.
Oh yeah,
So
all it
maybe.
needs is a dot too. A little dot
Right.
to explode. Yeah, I would be very careful
That's
holding
right.
that box, certainly. Well,
Yeah, exactly.
and one of the
Well, I mean,
things about
and he's just
John too
tapping
that I
it.
will give him credit for is he's constantly, not always, okay. Yeah. He's often, not constantly, he's often underestimated.
Yes.
And this is another scenario where he's not following procedure, but he's doing what he has to do to save the day.
Correct. Correct. So he taps on it and it slides down a little bit, and then he looks over it and you know he's trying to figure out what he can do about it. And then you know once again he bravely and stupidly opens it and sees the mechanism inside, which is really cool if you look at it.
It is.
The you know the production designer must have had a ball creating that,
The
you know, the
light and the
design of
liquid.
you know the flashing red and green lights and all the wires and stuff like that, which again it means nothing, but it's just great because it shows the complicated aspects of it and stuff like
It
that.
reminds me of a Stargate episode, but I think it was the 200th episode where they break the fourth wall so much in it. It's really great. But one of the things they're talking about is they're in the main controls room and they ask Gary, who's one of the characters on the show and an actor, what are all these for? Oh, they just light up. They don't do anything. And if you press this button here, which we do all the time, it doesn't do anything, but it looks really cool. And they basically go through the command and describe it as such. And I'm like, that's it's quite clever. But it does, it looks cool. So you want to believe that it's real. And this,
Okay, so it's like you know an airplane too.
yeah.
You know, what are all those flashing lights and dials doing? I don't know. They're just flashing lights and
Yeah,
dials.
pretty much. Like you believe it. That's all you need. We'll make it look real cool.
That's right. Right. And then John starts moving it down a little bit, and then he does something very smart. He actually looks at the gap between the back of this call box and the wall just to see if it's connected to anything, like if there's any tripwire or something like that. You know, so it's pretty smart the way that he's doing it. And he sees that there's nothing there and decides that what he's gonna do is take it off of the wall. And when he takes it off, you can see that it was being held up by suction
Yeah.
cups.
Yeah.
For me, when I think of suction cups, I don't think it would be something that would slide down
Nope.
very easily. It would
Unless it
either,
was
you know,
wet.
either it's stuck on, right, but either it's stuck on really well or it's just gonna fall. You know, it's one or the other.
Nope. Not in this instance. Maybe there's some
No,
subway slime that
no.
we're unaware of. I don't think that's the case.
Correct.
I think it probably
Right.
just looked good, and that's why they made it work that way.
That's right. And then John opens the box and puts it on his lap and starts looking at it. And then I don't know if you notice this. He looks at his hand
Oh, to see if maybe he got
as
some
if
of
he's
the.
reading.
Oh.
Well, it's at second 39.
Yeah.
To me, it looks like he's reading, like he had written something on his hand or something like that. Maybe he's looking for his line. You know, this is Bruce Willis looking for his line.
I've heard some actors do that. Okay. Yeah. What did he look at? Or is it his watch? Is his watch turned upside down? Is that it?
Maybe that's what it is. Okay, there you go.
He's looking at his watch. It's turned
He's looking at
upside
his
down.
watch.
Yep. He's seeing how
Yes,
much time he has.
he is looking at. Ooh, excellent. There you
I
go.
figured something
Oh, come on.
out. Woohoo!
I thought that Bruce Willis was just looking for his next line, which is, excuse me, please. You know, so who knows? Damn. You see, you always ruin everything, Heather.
I know, me with my
You ruin
knowledge.
the
Good
fun.
guesses. Yeah, I get like
That's
one
right.
good guess
That's
out of
right.
10. It's inevitable I'm going to get something right.
Hey, well, why not? There you go. And so, right, he looks at his watch, very good. And then he stands up and starts walking through the train, carrying this thing in a very strange way. You know, he's on the one hand holding onto the, you know, the railing on top, but he's holding this with one hand, and it's like a little wobbly. I don't know. I wouldn't trust him with that.
No, especially
You know,
knowing
just a little strange.
exactly how volatile It is if it mixes and hits anything. But at the same time, he's trying to hold on. He's trying to get through people. I've never been on a New York subway, so I'm not sure how I would navigate it. So maybe he's doing better than I would have. Maybe not. Maybe I would.
We'll probably talk about this.
Put it on my hip.
That's right. We'll probably talk about this weeks from now. But shouldn't it be very simple that all you do is just cut the tube that's feeding, one into the other, and then, you know, if they can't touch, then it's never going to explode.
I mean, that's really, really rational.
Again, it's not an explosive. It's the idea is you don't want these two things to blend. Mix.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. I have a friend who did that in the military. He was a bomb guy for a long time. I could ask him, but he probably wouldn't tell me.
Well, he wouldn't tell you because this isn't real.
I know, but maybe it is. Let's pretend. Come on. We have to indulge me in my fantasies. Okay. That's what we do.
No, but I'm saying if you want to ask your friend, he's just going to say, oh, that's that crazy Heather again, asking about, movie fiction bombs as opposed to real life bombs.
It's not going to be the first time I've asked him a question. He'll try and give me a semi-reasonable answer, which is why I know he's not really going to tell me anything about anything. I have questions all the time, and I like to have people that have answers, even if they're not willing to give me the correct answers or the answers that I want.
Okay, that's fair enough. As John is moving through this crowd, he goes, excuse me, please, let me through, please. And then someone says, it's him. I have no idea what that means. And then maybe it's, hey, it's Bruce Willis.
That's fair.
It's him.
Or is John McClane that notorious in New York for his exploits?
Maybe.
<It's> possible.
That's right. Excuse me, please. Pardon. And then the scene changes and we're back with Zeus at the trains, at the station itself. And he's looking at the guy who, is getting on the phone. So the actor who plays this character, who's known in the credits just as businessman, and says businessman, and then in quotes subway. His name is Ralph Buckley, and he has 13 IMDb credits, but he's mostly known for commercials because he's known as the Lotto guy.
Oh, he looked familiar to me. I couldn't place him anywhere, and I didn't look it up because
I don't know if it's the New York Lotto. Right. I don't know if it's the New York Lotto or if it's the National Lotto or something like that. But he does look familiar, but he probably looks familiar to us because we've seen Die Hard with a Vengeance so many times. And that's, he's the guy, making a phone call.
How often does that happen, too, where you're like, oh, I recognize this person for something. And then you go through their IMDb and then you scroll through it. And then after a while, you realize exactly that. Oh, the reason I know them is from this particular movie.
This movie.
Yeah, it's this movie that I know him from. Yeah, okay. I've done that more often than I'd like to admit.
I have no problem admitting it. I've done it also. So Zeus is standing there, and he's very polite. He says, excuse me, sir, but I'm expecting a call. I need that phone. And the guy looks at him and goes, why don't you use the other phone? Hey, why don't you use a cell phone? It's like, there's so many things that it could be saying here at this point.
I love that Zeus approaches everything with politeness at first. He does seem to want, particularly in the early stages of the movie, he wants to give people the chance to make the right choice, and they never do. And I think that's why he becomes way more on the side of John by the end of the movie than how he started off. Because he was definitely the more rational of the two. And then by the end of the movie, he's gone pretty rogue too.
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. And you see it here. You see moments like this where he's like, I'm going to apply rationality. I'm going to be polite. I'm going to try and do this and see if this works. Oh, it doesn't. Okay. Like he did with the woman on the phone earlier too, who wouldn't get off the phone. Yeah. That's fine.
No, well, John was being polite to her. He just screamed at her.
Oh, that's right.
Zeus wasn't even polite to her.
He was the one that lost his temper. All right, well then I take it back.
Yeah, she's actually one of the I think she's the casting director of the movie, or on the casting crew or something like that. The woman who was on the phone there. And then Zeus picks up the other phone, and we see that he just picks up a frayed cord
And he has
in
this like little
the you know
smirk on
in
his
the
face too.
yes he chuckles to himself, like saying, can this be any worse? And then he turns back to the guy and goes, sir, please, I need to use. And then he gets cut off.
Yep.
So people are going to have to come back tomorrow to find out what it is that he needs to use.
It's something important.
It is something. It definitely is. Definitely is. So, Heather, you have anything else for this minute?
Nothing for this one. I don't think. I don't think I've missed anything.
All right, great. So the script. So the script starts off with John on the train, and it says McLean is frantic, moving down the aisle of the car, looking under the seats. He looks at his watch, McLean's watch, 5:19. In the script, it's in the afternoon. It's not, it's 5:19 instead of 10:19, right? And it says McLean wipes sweat from his eyes, continues to the next to last car, bending, stooping, looking under the seats. There it is, something under the seat. McLean rushes to it. Commuters stare at him as he gets his hands and knees and looks under the seat. A bundle of plastic explosives, a black box transmitter attached to it, antenna protruding, is fixed to the underside of the seat with boxing tape. Very slowly, and it's funny that they actually write it out that way, with sweat streaming down his face, McLean begins to rip the tape off. He finally unleashes the explosive, stands up, and begins walking tenderly towards the back of the train. Subway station, platform payphone. Zeus is by the phone, nervously watching the clock. The businessman is fishing for quarters in his pocket. The digital clock flips to 5:20, and the businessman finds his goddamn quarters. He begins sliding them into the money slot of the phone. Sir, I need that phone. Drop dead. Zeus pulls his gun and points it at the businessman. Get away from the phone.
So that escalates
Yes.
really fast in the script.
Yes, it does. And I mean, one of the things that change big changes that they did between this between the script and the movie was the whole idea of having this this mixture of explosives as opposed to just using just your typical plastique and stuff like that. So, I like the innovative choice that they do in the movie, as
Yeah.
opposed to just, here he just finds a box with a bomb. Oh, come on, that's just your everyday run-of-the-mill thing you're gonna have in a thriller.
Yeah, it elevates it.
Yeah,
It feels it and it
that's right.
sets it apart from other things that you've seen at this point too. It does make it stand out.
Yes. All right, so every Monday we have a segment called McTurnan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTurnan films. So, Heather, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
All right, this is very difficult. I know he has not directed a ton of films, but I love his
He has
movies.
11.
I know, and
He has
they're
11
all
movies.
11, and that's it. And I had a hard time narrowing it down to five. I went back and forth with five. I was going to add Basic in, but I went with Last Action Hero. And I had to. I feel like it needs to be talked about more. It's one of those movies that's so great and people kind of brush over. Although I do feel like it's getting a bit of a resurgence lately. I feel like more people are talking about how much fun it is and how brilliant it kind of is. Plus Charles Dance. Anyway, tangent. Number four, the one submarine movie that I like, The Hunt for Red October. I love that movie. It's amazing. Fantastic book also. Number three, oh, this is one of my favorite movies just ever, ever, ever. Thomas Crown Affair. I love this movie so much. Pierce Brosnan is so perfect in it. It's amazing. And Rene Russo,
Have you
his
seen the original?
yes. And I actually like it more than the original. The original's great too. I like the original, but this is a movie I could watch on repeat over and over again and never get tired of, which I might have when it came out. I may have. I was still working at Blockbuster when it came out, and I remember taking it home on VHS and I watched it, and then I watched it over again, and then I think I bought it the next day. That's how much I loved it. My number two is Die Hard. That's not going to shock anybody. Am I number one is one of my favorite action movies of all time that when I'm sad is my movie comfort food. The movie that I turn on when I am feeling like crap, I watch Predator. It is still.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Medicine Man.
No. Yes, I've seen Medicine Man. It's not any, that one's not making it on my list. I haven't seen it in probably 20 years though. When I was looking at it, I was thinking maybe I should rewatch this. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. It's the only, I saw it when I was a kid. So maybe I would have a different appreciation for it.
No, I was joking. I actually am not a fan of Medicine Man. I probably should rewatch it also, but I'm not a fan of it. But no, I knew you were going with Predator there. So,
yeah. Well, for number one, for sure. I am curious though. I remember my parents were really excited to see Medicine Man. We went to the theater, I think, to see it. I'm almost positive. I usually know and recall specifically all of my theater adventures, and there's a lot of them, but I remember all of those experiences. And this is one of the few that I'm like, I'm not really sure, but I do remember the hype at home about it. So maybe that was part of it too, was being disappointed. I don't know. When's the last time you watched it?
It's been a few years. Okay. It's probably been about 5 years.
But not 20. Okay. So you've seen it as a grown adult. Yeah, I haven't with that maturity. So do you recommend that I do a rewatch?
I can't tell you because, I mean, I remember that I don't like it.
Okay. You know? Then maybe I won't.
How much do I not like it is something else. Yeah. But again, one of the things I like about rewatching movies is, you know, it all also depends on your frame of mind when you're watching a movie and where you are and stuff like that. And sometimes you will watch a movie one time and think it's terrible and then watch it again in a different setting and enjoy it even more. So,
yeah,
that's one of the problems with that. You know.
Theater experiences, I always call them, instead of beer goggles, I call them theater goggles. Because especially if it's like a movie that's hyped up and you go on opening weekend and it's full and everybody's reacting to it, you have a physical reaction to that kind of thing. And then I know there's so many that I've watched and then later on I've gone, I don't think I liked that as much as I said I did. I realized I had theater goggles. The experience was more fun than the actual movie. I can tell you that every single time I'm forced to go to a Transformers movie with my son. and then I get home and go, oh, that was really bad. It was really bad. Had some fun moments.
Okay,
yeah.
So the last time I saw Medicine Man was on July 27th, 2017, which is actually my anniversary. I don't know why I watched it that day. And I gave it a 3 out of 10.
Oh, that's not good. So, I'm not going back to it. No. I'm not going back to it. That's bad. That's awesome that you keep track though. You and Dylan Fields.
Oh yeah, I've seen over 11,000 movies, so you know I have to keep track.
Yeah, you kind of do. Yeah. You kind of do, and you know you definitely have earned your name, Movie Rob. In our community, you even have. That's gotta freak out normal people though, right?
Oh yeah, it freaks out my wife. She's like, "How can you talk about a movie for so long?" I'm like, how can you not?
Yeah. The problem is stopping me, not the start.
That's right. That's right. The problem is limiting. All right. So, Heather, why don't you tell people where they can find Heather Baxendale?
Oh, my goodness, you guys. So, it's been a while since I've been on Rob's show. And I have my website up and going again, finally. So you can find all of my goodies on heatherbaxendale.com. You can find all of my voice acting stuff. You can follow all my podcasts. And you can check out my books on there, which I just finished the Prophecy Trilogy. So you can go look up a fun adventure flick. Flick. Not flick. It's a book. Talking movies here.
Well, when's the movie going to be made?
Oh, gosh. I want to be in the movie.
Have you sold the rights yet?
I'm not selling the rights. They're mine. I'm going to get them tattooed on me.
No, I want to be able to do it movies by minute. I want to do it minute by minute.
Oh, goodness. Okay, all I can tell you is that I can't be short-winded in storytelling either. It is 1 million K words and almost 2,000 pages of storytelling. It's an epic adventure. It's an epic fantasy adventure. But there, it is so heavily influenced by 80s action flicks, 80s fantasy stuff, 90s dystopian kind of things going on. It has so many elements of the things I loved in my childhood. Mirrored back.
That is really cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Excellent. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moveyouroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can shoot me one at moveyouroundminute@moveyourob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.